Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Yeah, I've been rolling along for 2 hours. We're on from 1 to 4, so if you can't listen to this live, you can always access the podcast, John and Ken on Demand, at KFIAM640.com and also the iHeartRadio app. 15 minutes away from another keyword being revealed, your chance for $1,000 in the KFI Cash Refill Contest is coming up around 3:20. Big story recently, and just an awful story, was an emergency room doctor who was riding his bicycle on Pacific Coast Highway in Dana Point. He was rammed into by a motorist, a Long Beach man by the name of Van Roy Evans Smith. And then what happened after that, even more horrific. Smith got out of the car and stabbed the doctor, and he died. It's a terrible, terrible story that came out of Orange County. And the update on it, which came Friday, the doctor's name is Michael John Mamone. And the man behind this, according to arresting police, is being held on $1 million bail in jail in Orange County. And he decided and agreed to do a jailhouse interview with the Southern California News Group reporter. And we reported on this story Friday when the story first came out. He basically confessed to the crime and then went off on one mentally deranged rant. We're going to bring on the reporter now behind the story for the Southern California News Group. Scott Schwebke is going to talk to us about this whole experience.
You could read it in the Orange County Register. Scott, how are you?
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me.
How did you get the interview with him?
Well, I wish I had some elaborate cloak and dagger story to tell you. I made an appointment, went down like any citizen, showed my driver's license, and went into the interview booth. And he came down, and we chatted for about an hour.
And nobody else tried this?
I guess not. I don't know. I mean, I kept thinking something's bound to go wrong, you know, I'm bound to get, you know, kicked out of here or something. But I just,
and he didn't know you or he wasn't aware of you or knew you at all?
He didn't know me before until I, you know, obviously when he sat down, I identified myself and told him who I was and what I was doing and that thing. And he was, you know, very candid and willing to talk.
And so. No lawyer got in the way?
Nope, just me and him. And even toward the end, the guard said I could keep talking longer, I guess. I mean, I wasn't, you know, I just went in as a regular visitor and did all the things that you're supposed to do and then just interviewed the guy. So
this may sound like TV stuff, but is he really behind glass on a phone talking to you, or what's the setup?
Yeah, it's behind a glass. He's on a phone. I couldn't take any pad or pen or anything or any kind of recording device, so I had to commit this whole rambling interview to memory. So as soon as I got out of there, I scrambled and got my notepad and wrote down everything that I remembered. So
What was his demeanor?
He was lucid, very lucid, very straightforward. Didn't really, he answered like every question that I asked. Obviously rambled quite a bit. I had to get him back on track to, you know, the salient points of this whole unfortunate incident, or not even an incident, unfortunate crime. I mean, obviously sad crime. But yeah, he was lucid, and he talked a lot about religion and some of his background, and the main takeaway is he believes he's God and Jesus Christ, and he was entitled to commit murder. And if folks knew who he was, they'd let him out of jail because he's the Messiah and the King of Kings, he describes himself. So
when he said he was the Messiah, the King of Kings, did he proclaim this, or he talked in a matter-of-fact conversational way?
Well, I mean, it was in conversational way, but I mean, he did proclaim it, and he believes he is actually that person. So he thinks that he is the Messiah.
There's one new, by the way, when he talked about what he apparently is confessing to what he did that day, mm-hmm. was there any reason that he picked this particular bicyclist? And can you tell us any more of that?
No reason other than he said that he woke up that day and he fully expected to kill somebody. He's been having communications from others. I don't know if it means telepathically. I don't think it means they phoned him up or anything, but that, you know, telling him to do certain things. And these communications have been ongoing for quite a while. And he, like I said, he woke up that day, expected to fully kill somebody. It was going to be a man because he said he wouldn't kill a woman. He put a BB gun in his car to distract whoever his intended victim was. He went down to a gun store in Long Beach area, bought a long knife. And the reason he believes, you know, he was entitled to a knife because there's a scripture in the Gospel of Luke that says, "He that hath no sword, let him sell his garment and buy one." So he believed that was the proper thing to do. And he also considered using a bow and arrow in the attack, but ultimately decided against it.
He considered, he felt compelled to kill Mamone. As soon as he saw him on the bike, can you describe how he felt?
Yeah, he said he felt like a bit of an out of body experience, but he felt compelled, and he saw the person, the doctor in the crosswalk, and that he knew that was the person he was supposed to kill that day, and so he went ahead with it.
He even talked about his attack is small compared to all the murders that happened. He even mentioned the Turkey earthquake.
Yeah, he said that. He believes his one murder is small compared to all the murders that are going to happen down the line. He didn't say exactly through who, but he did say that. Well, even Jesus has killed thousands of people in the Turkey earthquake. So my one murder is fairly insignificant.
And he did comment on reports that at the scene, people heard him talk about white privilege and maybe yelled out some racial slurs or something.
Did he elaborate on that?
Yeah, he denied the racial slur. He did. He said he made one homophobic kind of a slur against an individual. It was getting too close to him. It was subduing him at the scene, but he denied making any racial slurs. Actually, he's mixed race. He's black and white, and he said that's caused a lot of trouble for him from both sides. So he didn't specifically talk about. He said he didn't specifically talk about race when he was being subdued. So I don't know where that where those allegations came from. We haven't been able to confirm that.
And he was diagnosed apparently with paranoid schizophrenia and bipolar disorder, but he denied to you that he had any mental illnesses.
Yeah, he denied that, and he didn't really go into much detail about it. But obviously, you know, talking to him and listening to him for an hour ramble on about receiving communications from people telling him to do things and that kind of thing. Obviously, there seems to be some kind of a problem there.
So when he rambled, because an hour is a long time, and I imagine he did most of the talking. He always veered into this stuff about religion,
the Messiah,
and the Messiah, and nothing else. Nothing about his life, his background, his family.
Yeah, he talked about. Oh, he was born in Jamaica, and he came over. I think it was in soon after 2008. He married a woman from the U.S. who was over there, and he came over. He worked. He worked as a janitor briefly. Then he started working. He's a junior employee in an investment firm. I think. I don't think he was ever a top level executive. And then he most recently opened his tax preparation and accounting firm in Long Beach. So he talked a little bit about that. And he talked about, being in jail has given him a chance, he says, to clear his mind, has got him away from some of the vices that have taken hold of his life in the last few years, including excess drinking, marijuana use, and seeing prostitutes. So he says he's away from that stuff now. He's in jail. He actually said he feels more at peace in jail now than he did when he was out. So, yeah, it's hard to figure.
Did you feel uncomfortable talking to him?
I've done this a long time, and I've talked to criminals before, and I've talked to folks in jail. I've never had anybody confess to me. I just tried to more or less listen to him, and he was behind plexiglass, so I didn't feel too threatened or anything. I think he felt comfortable talking to me, and that's why he opened up. So I've not terribly. I was just trying to remember everything he was saying. That was the main thing. I was having to go back, and ask him things a couple times to make sure I had it down right. So that was the main focus, is trying to listen and get the story.
Did he maintain eye contact with you, or?
Oh, yeah, looked right at me. And, it was a pretty free-flowing conversation. He wasn't reluctant or hesitant, which made it a lot easier than some of the other interviews I've done from folks in jail before.
Well, Scott, we really appreciate you coming on and telling us about the experience.
Hey, great
folks
work.
Can read this. Orange County Register, Southern California News Group. This is reporter Scott Schwebke, who interviewed. Thank you very much for coming on.
Sometimes. Hey, yeah, sometimes if you just show up, all he did is
that.
He called and said,
give it a shot.
Give it a shot, yeah.
And the Long Beach man who was accused of killing the Dana Point doctor by running him over on the road and then stabbing him to death agreed to this jailhouse interview and confessed to the reporter we just talked to, Scott Schwebke. More coming up. John and Ken, KFI, AM 640, live everywhere, the iHeartRadio app. All right, well, one of these stories recently ran in the El Segundo Times, and you just got to love it because, the way they approach the story. The headline, "What's the matter with Portland? Shootings, theft, and other crime test the city's progressive strain." It's remarkable. Who is this reporter? Jenny Jarvie.
Jenny Jarvie.
Their national correspondent. Did this long story on Portland. It's not that big a city. And for them to have thousands of homeless people, that really is, it's 641,000 people. They have over 6,000 homeless. That's a big proportion.
I hate to be repetitive, but again, you will get a homeless problem in proportion to the amount
your tolerance,
what you allow.
Right.
The less you enforce the law, the more bad stuff you're going to get. And progressivism may be the stupidest ideology, philosophy to govern a city that God ever created. I mean, it is so destructive. The Germans in World War II didn't do as much damage as what these progressives are doing to these once beautiful cities on the West Coast. It is incredible, and they stick to it, which is the sign of a religious cult. When everything in your life is screaming, oh my God, this doesn't work. This is horrible. This is bad. And, well, I'm going to do it anyway because this is the way I feel. Then you're in a religious cult. Your brain is seized up and died.
This is one of those situations where it's almost amazing that the Times even did this half-hearted story, because often because Fox News loves to highlight Portland, San Francisco's problems, and the other side of the media likes to say, oh, they exaggerate. Oh, they cherry pick. but they actually sent the reporter there to ask people. And the first person they talked to was a woman that's fed up. They've dumped feces and used syringes in my yard. They play music at 3 a.m. They stripped stolen cars for parts. We feel abandoned. We pay our taxes. The police are not watching over security. But the second person, Juniper Simonis.
This is what I'm talking about. This crazy person.
She rents a home across the street from one of the big encampments, and she says, by the way, her front yard had signs, disarm, defend, defund, and dismantle the police. And she's against sweeps. She's against any trying to regulate homelessness out of a city. I don't view that as liberal at all. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, the problem is not that Portland is too liberal. It's not liberal enough.
They want even more money. And that's how this argument always goes. We're not spending enough money.
But you see, it's beyond, I despise it being, well, one side says this and one side says that. Use your eyes. Look out there yourself with your eyes. You've seen all the money, all the programs. You've seen a complete lack of enforcement. There's your result. You have enormous piles of feces and needles and people dying and drug addiction and mental illness. You lose. The issue is decided. Now, the question is, do you have the survival instincts as a city to end the insanity? Do you? We talked about how individuals lose their survival instincts. I think sometimes societies lose their survival instincts.
Yeah. And this crowd that we're talking about in Portland, they want to do it without any enforcement. Sure, I'd like to solve the homelessness problem, but there can't be any enforcement used. These people need to be gently talked to. And if it takes years to get them to leave their encampments, we'll just have to tolerate that.
Here's the results. And these are real. It doesn't matter what news organization is producing these numbers. These are the actual facts. The homeless has jumped from 4,000 to 6,600 in 3 years. Shootings have tripled. Homicides went from 36 to 97 in 3 years, a record. Lower level crimes went from 6,500 stolen cars in 2019 to 11,000. So you had double the number of stolen cars in 3 years. You had the homicides almost triple. You had the homeless go up by more than 50%. So this is not a political debate.
Right.
This doesn't work. This creates disaster and misery, and it's really disgusting and gross, and no one wants to live like this. So who cares if the lady with all her cute little signs on the front lawn feels a certain way about the police?
They talked to John Torin, the black owner of a construction company, born and raised in Portland. I mean, this guy kind of figured it out. He said people are now feeling less safe. The city has to respond. Progressive means something different now. When I was growing up, when I think of progressive now, I think of extremism. That's a good word for it. That's kind of what it is. It's over-the-edge extremism. And he's a guy that's... there's more of them in Portland than there used to be. You're saying enough of this. We're not going down this path anymore.
How could you debate this? Seriously, how is there a debate? And the people who are trying to debate it, don't you have to question their mental stability?
Oh, and I love this. The dopey mayor. Didn't we throw him in the dumpster? Is that Ted Wheeler?
Yes.
Cities across the nation are all seeing homelessness. We need more state and federal safety nets. That's it. Just more money.
No. The cities that see
the annual city spending for homeless housing and services since he's been mayor just 5 years went from $27 million to $94 million. And you got your money. Shut up.
You tripled the money. You doubled the homelessness. Again, just use facts.
Not the answer, right?
Okay, because the homeless nonprofits and the government are filled with criminals who are siphoning off the money. I mean, at some point, you're listening. These people are just fools. They're raving fools.
They went really down the hole when we got to 2020 and there was all the unrest because the anarchists took over Portland like they took over Seattle. And that just added to the problem of the homelessness.
And the anarchists are involved in all these activist groups.
Oh, yeah, fighting, right.
Right. And so they got what they wanted. They destroyed Portland. I saw one survey that said three quarters of them who live in the metro area refuse to go to downtown Portland. Wow. So the activists won. All these homeless advocates, you win. Because like California lost a net of 350,000 people. Same thing happened in Portland. The normal people left. and they've left your sewer. Enjoy it.
All right, we got more coming up. John and Ken, KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. Well, one of the stories that popped up in the last... We were just talking about Portland. Now we'll move down a little bit and talk about San Francisco, which has had its collection of problems with the homeless and drug use. This one is another aspect of life in San Francisco. It's the growing problem of prostitution on the streets. The city is actually considering this. At least one supervisor has voiced the idea of establishing, her name is Hillary Ronan, a red light district in San Francisco. Right now, they're trying to do something about some particular streets where apparently the hookers hang out and the drivers just cruise by all hours of the night looking for a hookup. So they're closing off some streets, but there is a discussion. And, of course, prostitution. No. These are sex workers.
You know what? You know what's fascinating? No, as San Francisco and Portland get more and more disgusting and dangerous, the only ideas that come out of legislators is how can we make it more dangerous and more disgusting?
That's right.
They never spend publicly a minute on saying, all right, this has gone too far here. People are leaving in droves. It's like, what else can we bring in? Let's see. We got the criminals running around, right? Cars are getting stolen. People are getting beat up. Lots of shoplifting. We got people dying in the streets. Lots of needles, feces, meth. I got an idea. Let's bring in the prostitutes. Oh, good. Good. That'll spruce up the neighborhood.
Do you remember our conversations with Dr. Monica Gandhi from San Francisco Hospital?
UC San Francisco, I think. She was a
very
professor.
Bright woman, and she was one of those who was the voice of reason during the lockdown. And she used a term, which I think was appropriate for the COVID lockdowns, harm reduction. Okay, this is another piece of jargon. But that idea was, well, don't be heavy-handed and hard-fisted on people. Let people make decisions for themselves about masks and where they want to go, which made sense. It was common sense. But they apply that same thing to things like prostitution and drug use. They're like, oh, no. We're not going to try to limit the behavior. Let's just see if we can reduce the harm associated with the behavior. This is why they want to allow people to shoot drugs, right? Right in front of them.
All right.
We'll stand by with the Narcan. This is why with prostitution, we'll give them a legal district where they can have their Johns come in and negotiate for a sexual hookup.
But why don't they take it indoors?
Indoors.
Why do they allow all this stuff outdoors to destroy neighborhoods? I mean, there are people living in these neighborhoods, or there's businesses, or people want to visit, or just walk through. If you want,
oh yeah, you're right, because I think it destroys the quality of life for everyone.
Of course it does, because one pathological behavior leads to another pathological behavior, right? If you let drunks lay in the street, the drug addicts will come. You have the drug addicts in the street, well, the prostitutes are going to come. Well, which means the criminals are going to come, which means the mental patients and the meth addicts are going to come, right? It's one big family. Well, now, I don't understand. And this has been known for hundreds of years.
The comparison, of course, they're using is Amsterdam. Now, I've been to Amsterdam, and yes, I did do a tour of the red light district. But what that became is all full of tourists. There is still, you know, the windows to the houses or the hotels or wherever where the hookers do stand in the window there. But there's so many tourists. I don't think it's a legitimate red light district as probably defined or anything.
But
as an example,
people
are just there because they're curious to see what it's like. There's more tourists there than there are men looking for hookups.
Do they have thousands of deranged drug addicts, homeless addicts in the streets?
They did not. Not when I was there. I didn't find that to be a problem.
You know,
and I think they're another one of these cities that does allow for open drug use.
But what do you think is going to happen in San Francisco? I hate it when everyone goes, what about Amsterdam? It's like, shut up.
Yeah, it's
Let's look in San
thing.
Francisco, the current state of life in San Francisco.
Yeah, there's another story related to this, and apparently it's not just San Francisco that's seeing an uptick here in California of, I like the way to describe this, women wearing thongs in broad daylight on street corners, pimps following mothers taking their kids to school, and prostitutes twerking at traffic have become more common scenes in California. I've yet to run into this, but maybe I'm just not driving in the right neighborhoods lately. But
this is going on in Woodland Hills, I think.
Remember the law that they passed, which no longer made it a crime to loiter? Remember all that? And that was supposed to be to cut down on arresting, and they said a lot of it dealt with transgender women.
Oh, you know, this
unfairly targeted.
Let me tell you, this is Scott Wiener, who is a weirdo. Okay, he's this he's this emaciated looking little weasel from San Francisco, and he writes laws and gets them passed, and they're all about degrading public life, and they often have like some sexual component to them. There's something really creepy and weird about him. And then they always find some marginalized group to use as a shield. So he thinks there should be public prostitution, so because the old laws targeted disproportionately transgender women. I don't even know where to begin with that. I don't care. I just don't think
he got one complaint, so he decided to run with the law. Right?
I don't think anybody wants to live in a neighborhood or have a business. Or even walk through the neighborhood in a place where there's rampant prostitution. That's something that should be done privately. With the internet, there's no reason for this. So I mean, he is so gross and disgusting, and he's always about taking the worst elements of human nature and enabling those worst elements to thrive in public in front of other people.
Apparently, a Los Angeles police source said that the law is definitely handcuffing them from cracking down on prostitution. Because of this reform, they can only make arrests if a suspect admits to prostitution, which they said is pretty rare. Other than that, they can't, because this was one of their tools they used to deter people from doing this.
You know, and all they're doing is making areas uninhabitable. And we're seeing it, right? People are fleeing downtown Portland. They're fleeing San Francisco. They're fleeing parts of California. They're just fleeing because nobody wants to live like this. And at the end of it, you will have a Detroit situation. And Detroit never came back. You can destroy a city and it never comes back. And you will look back 20 years from now and say, my God, this is a shame. This is a travesty. But it's too late. It's dead.
Yeah, that's a comparison I've always used. The way the Rust Belt went, particularly cities like Detroit, you're beginning to see it. It's probably going to take a little longer and slower here because that was much more about jobs, you know, just the depression and the jobs all moved out. But quality of life's important to people, and they'll move out too. All right, we got more coming up. John and Ken, KFI, AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeart Radio app. We're on from 1 to 4, so we're almost done. If you missed any part of the show, you can always check us out with the podcast at KFI. AM640.com or, of course, the iHeart Radio app. Well, people are probably planning maybe their spring break vacations coming up, and the State Department has issued one of its sternest warnings ever not to travel to a bunch of parts of Mexico. Colima, Guerrero, Michoacán, Sinaloa, and a couple of other states. I can't even. It's all over crime. Now, there's always problems with drug cartels and crime in that country, but they sometimes step up the warning. It's the Bureau of Consular Affairs. They say that there have been shootings between warring gangs that have injured or killed bystanders, kidnappings, and also they're targeting a lot of people that are green card holders or lawful permanent residents, along with, of course, tourists. And we still don't know what happened to that Orange County public defender, Elliot Blair, who died while on vacation in Rosarito when he was found at the bottom of a hotel balcony on the ground. And family thinks that he was beaten and possibly thrown over the balcony, saying he has a bunch of skull fractures. And the Mexican officials simply saying, looks like he got drunk and fell. So, and the big story there was that they reported they were victims of a shakedown by police officers just an hour or two before that happened when they were driving back to the hotel.
Yeah, I don't believe the Mexican police.
I don't either.
It's hard to imagine the amount of corruption and the amount of violence and the infiltration of the cartels in law enforcement and government throughout Mexico. I mean, it's really, some of it is a totally lawless society. And there's nobody to go to if you're in trouble.
Yeah, the other card that came into a play, they just arrested last month, Ovidio Guzman. He's the son of El Chapo, Joaquin El Chapo Guzman, who's in a United States federal prison for a long term.
El Chapo.
El Chapo off the old block?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're right. The father's El Chapo, the son's El Chapo. That's a good one. You just made that up?
Just made that up.
It's pretty good on the fly. He's the leader of the Sinaloa drug cartel. And the last time they captured him, I guess that it's not going to happen this time. Remember, they took a bunch of hostages and the decision was made to release him. But they arrested him again. And I, you know, they go back and forth in Mexico as to how to deal with the drug cartel violence. Obviously, it employs people and brings in money.
Oh, yeah.
There's that side to it.
One of the largest.
The other side to it can get very violent and people lose their heads. And, so,
well, they're more violent. There's more psychos in the drug cartels, right?
Yeah.
All the psychos are on the side of the cartels. There's more bad guys than there are good guys.
I think it pays better for psychos.
Yeah, it is great pay. Because if you're a psycho, what are you going to do? You going to bag groceries? Or are you going to shoot people in the head? When the drug deals don't go right. I mean,
it's a good choice.
Yeah. I mean, a psycho.
You want to bag groceries? You want to shoot people or cut their heads off and put them on spikes?
A decent guy is going to want to bag groceries. A psycho is going to want to put their heads on spikes.
I don't want to be one of these people that overreacts, but I have not really ever been to Mexico except for a short visit to Tijuana, and that's not really going very far. So I but I don't even know Deborah Mark has gone there. She got COVID. Do they have a warning about that? Or
they should.
Yeah, so they're concerned on many fronts. It asked tourists to exercise increased caution when traveling in 17 Mexican states, and one of them has the popular destination Cancun. A lot of people go there.
The one time I went and we stayed at one of those resorts near Cancun,
yeah,
the whole concept there scared me because you couldn't go directly to the front gate. You had to go on a series of winding roads that went up and back and up and back and up and back. And they had bumps on the roads to slow cars down.
Oh.
Because they wanted to make it difficult. I imagine they had cameras, and if they spotted drug cartel cars or vans coming, they would get a lot of warning because you couldn't go through all the ups and downs very quickly because of the bumps. And then when you got to the front of the resort, it was a tall metal gate. It was like trying to get into a castle. And then there was security that had your name on a list. And then they would open the gate and you'd get inside. And then you were supposed to stay inside the whole time. Unless you wanted to do tourism, because we went to see pyramids, and then you had to go in their van. And their vans were plain white because they didn't want to advertise they were from a hotel. And the whole thing kind of freaked me out.
Yeah, that's pretty elaborate.
It looked like they were prepared for war. They were prepared for an invasion. High walls, ringing around the edges of the property.
That's right. Take any chances.
Conway's here.
I got one answer for you. How about Hawaii? You heard of that?
Yeah, you're right.
Got the same weather.
Yeah, Hawaii's kind of weather.
I'm not a fan of Mexico.
All right. We have. I believe we're going to play the audio of last Friday when I said this game is going to come down to one final call from the ref to benefit Kansas City. Because there was 73% of all the money was on Philly, and Vegas needed a flag.
Oh.
And they got one.
I see.
Yep.
So, and they must have paid off that defensive back because he said it was an okay call.
Oh, yeah. Everybody's on payroll. Yeah. Everybody out there is making some kind of dough.
Listen to you.
I was surprised in the Super Bowl that they introduced the sign language guy and not the four Navy pilots that flew over. You know, these four women, they worked their ass off. You know, they don't entrust, you know, $70 million planes just to any idiot.
I know.
And these women, the glass ceiling, all the struggles they had, and not a single name, but we know the guy doing the sign language.
He came out and they introduced him, and I said out loud, well, what does he do? What's he going to do? And then later on, they cut to him doing the sign language.
He's the sign language guy, right? I don't know.
It's inclusive. Stop it.
I guess. And then the latest balloon that was knocked down, I guess Joe Biden just recently said, they shot it down in honor of Damar Hamlin.
Okay. They shot it down in front of
him. He just uncorks these little grenades.
In honor of Damar Hamlin. Yeah. That's going to go on for six more years.
All right.
It does seem like a lot.
Ding dong.
Yeah. All right. Ding dong. All right. Send the email to
John and
Ken.
We assume you have
Ken
some
show.
Kind of show.
It's the John and Ken show.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks.
All right. Crush just got the news.
Yeah, right.
Live in the 24-hour KFI newsroom.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back. Plus, no payments for 90 days. And take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Tired of restless nights? At Leesa, we know good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. From memory foam mattresses to hybrids that keep you cool all night long, Leesa's mattresses offer exceptional comfort and support with free delivery and 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.